Welcome to the special edition of Eye on the Illini. Terrence Shannon Jr. was not guilty on both counts, and we are going to have ex-sensation Mitch Gilfillan, who's going to come on. He was the lawyer who was covering this and putting the notes on X. People were obviously reading his every tweet. It was fantastic stuff to keep fans and to keep basically people interested in the legal process up to date. He is going to be here.
Are you looking to grow your business? Do that with the Illini Guys Radio Network by advertising on the Illini Guys Sports Spectacular. The weekly two-hour syndicated show airs on more than 20 stations and is heard in six states throughout the Midwest, including Chicago, St. Louis, the Quad Cities, Peoria, Bloomington, Springfield, Champaign, Decatur, Rockford, and Quincy, just to name a few, with a reach of more than 11 million people. For information, send an email to mike@illiniguys.com and let's work together to grow your business. That's mike@illiniguys.com and let the power and reach of the Illini Guys Network work for you.
If you're trying to quit drinking or doing too many drugs, listen to me. You don't know me and we'll never meet. I had a problem like you once. I drank and used to party a little too much till it got out of control and almost ruined my life. I realized I needed help to fix my problem before it totally destroyed me. If you've tried to fix your drinking and drug problem and you know you can't do it alone, you need to call the National Treatment Advisors. They'll immerse you into a 30-day program to replace your old habits with new habits and totally change your life. And if you have PPO private health insurance, the entire program may be covered. Fix your problem right now before it gets any worse. Get clean. Call now and learn more. 800-961-2480. 800-961-2480. 800-961-2480. 800-961-2480.
Welcome to Eye on the Illini. This is Mike Kegley, and I have a real treat today because, first off, we have the good fortune of reporting the news that Terrence Shannon Jr. was not guilty on either count, which is a huge relief for Illini fans. Obviously, the biggest thing we wanted to do was that justice would prevail, and there's a real positive there. But for those of you who, Illini fans who've been following the case on Twitter, Mitch Gilfillan has been doing this on his Twitter account. I told Mitch before he joined us, I said, I feel like I know you because I've been following it so long. Mitch, thanks for joining us there at the Black Stack Brewery on Massachusetts in downtown Lawrence when the courtroom got, everybody got kind of kicked out. I appreciate you finding a way to come on Eye on the Illini.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. As I mentioned right before we got on, the courthouse staff and bailiffs in the most polite way said, okay, we've had a long week. It's time for everybody to move on. And so I'm just a few blocks from the courthouse right now. I tried to find a place where we could talk, and certainly appreciate you having me on.
Oh, this is fantastic. Again, what a great public service you've done to help. How did you get involved in following and being active in Twitter on this particular case?
Yeah, so my background is in basketball. As a former college athlete myself and a college basketball coach, I still represent Division I and Division II college coaches on the men's and women's side. And so it was kind of my worlds colliding, the law and obviously basketball with Terrence Shannon. I took a very keen interest in this case back in December when it was initially filed in Douglas County.
Yeah, that is fantastic. And of course, you played D1 ball at Lehigh. Now, if I'm getting my timelines right, you were a few years before Lehigh put a beating on Duke in the NCAA tournament, correct?
A couple years before. However, we did go to the NCAA tournament as well in 2004. They made it again, obviously, with C.J. McCollum and their crew in 2010 and 2012. So certainly connected to the Lehigh family.
Yeah, that is awesome. Now, what kind of law do you practice? If you could tell me a little bit about your practice and your firm, that would be great, just to also educate the folks who might be needing your services someday.
Thanks so much. Yeah, I'm a law partner at the Quinn Johnston Law Firm in Peoria, Illinois. We also have an office in Springfield. I'm fortunate to work with a very, very good, strong-minded group of attorneys in Peoria. My law practice consists of about 50 to 60% medical malpractice. I also do some auto, construction, and premises liability defense. And then I also do some family law where I work with individual clients. I have a small part of my practice carved out for college basketball coaches, along with NIL collectives. In this new world that we're living in with NIL and it affecting both student athletes, universities, and coaches, I have a unique interest and a unique perspective because as a former player, a former coach, and then the legal side, I can see it from three different sides. I think that's helpful to clients.
Yeah, that is a huge advantage. And as the marketplace changes, that might be a real opportunity area for you. Let's talk a little bit about the case. The first question I have is, if you could tell me, what would you take away from this case? Now that we know the jury has come back from a not guilty, you as a lawyer, as your background in college basketball, what were your takeaways?
Well, I think the most important thing when you look at this big picture wise is one word sums it up, and it's justice. And the court system played itself out. There was an alleged victim. There was an alleged defendant. There truly was both parties having their day in court. And people talk about that. They use that as a catchphrase, or, you know, go to court or take it to court. And they did. And the jury of 12 of your local peers, this being Kansas, heard the case. They heard the facts. They heard the evidence. They heard the testimony. And they made a decision. It was a major decision that they made. But this is the system that we live in. So whether it happened in Champaign, in Peoria, in Chicago, in Lawrence, Kansas, you submit yourself to the system. When something happens or something goes wrong or you're in a dispute in a county, you have to defend yourself or prosecute your case in that county. And so these were the cards that TSJ was dealt. And he certainly did that and obviously came out victorious. I want to back up just a little bit. Okay. You asked the question. It is, at the end of the day, there is no winners in this. There is no winners. Terrence Shannon Jr. and his family have been through a nightmare, a month by month, day by day, minute by minute nightmare. The alleged victim has been in, you know, living a nightmare. Her family was there. She was in court. The friends have been there. They were all in tears. Not one person in this entire process came out victorious, if you will. Despite there being a not guilty verdict and Terrence Shannon Jr. moving on with his life, he still has to live with this for the rest of his life, of this being tied to his name and him being a part of this case.
Yeah, I totally agree. The only win I would see out of this is what I think is nothing short of exemplary behavior from Terrence Shannon Jr. over a long course of time with an incredible amount of stress when you figure in this case, plus everything going on as you're trying to get your degree, plus competing at the highest levels in the NCAA. Were I a scout for the NBA, I would look at the material character of him as being outstanding based upon his response to a high stress situation and how he's dealt with it.
Yeah. And I would take that. And then I'd put that times a million on steroids, is that he has been through the most traumatic experience of an individual's lifetime. Not only did he go through this, the criminal process, he had the civil process to go through too with the federal court regarding the preliminary injunction. On top of that, he was a student trying to do homework. On top of that, he was trying to compete at the highest level of college basketball. On top of that, he had expectations out of this world of people that thought he was guilty, of his own coaches wanting him, you know, to play, not sure if he's going to get to play. I mean, the ups and downs that this man has gone through for the last 6 months is unprecedented, and I would never wish it upon anyone.
Yep, very well said. Now, as a lawyer, taking a look at the tactical trial decisions, were there any that stood out to you as you were watching the trial with your Rolodex of experience?
Yeah, I think this is a case where you had to act fast and you had to act responsible. The judicial system is painstakingly slow. It's known to every litigant. It's known to every attorney. As there's birds chirping at where I'm at outside. And so the process is slow by nature. However, given the draft that he's projected to be a potential first or second round pick, is that time was not on his side. He had the season, which was a short window back in December when he had 3 months left to play when he was suspended, not on his side. He had the NBA draft, which is in June, not on his side, with criminal charges pending. And so given all of those circumstances that led to this, I think his attorneys should be have a statue of them wherever it may reside, whether it's in Champaign or by the basketball facility or whatever it may be, on how justice can be moved forward in a quick and swift way and done correctly. The federal court case was its own separate animal in the federal court system with the civil preliminary injunction, and then obviously separate and apart a case in a completely different county, completely different state. And so there are so many layers to this, and I'm just still taking it all in. You know, we're an hour and a half removed from the verdict. And there's just so many different layers of people on his side, on his team, that are owed a lot of gratitude and a lot of praise for what they've done. I'd be remiss if I did not point out that perhaps one of the most important people in his life that has stood by his side the entire time, that was 4 feet from him at all times during trial, was his mother. Moms are very special people, and she should be put on a pedestal herself. She was so tenderhearted. She was so kind. She was so respectful, despite going through what is a very traumatic experience and her having her own opinions, but keeping them to herself. I would say with everything that I got, that Terrence Shannon Jr.'s mom is one of the best moms in the world.
That's awesome to hear. She has been a real friend of Illini guys, particularly great relationship with our director of recruiting, Kedrick Prince, spectacular mom. And Terrence Shannon Jr., you know, part of the reason why people were so shocked is because there was never a moment of behavior in his life that ever compares to the allegations. So in that respect, it must be incredibly stressful to deal with that and handle it so well.
And he did that. And he testified to that today on the stand about who he is as a person, who his mom raised. This is something that he never would have done. And he stated very clearly, very confidently, without sounding arrogant, that he did not grab, pull, do anything of the nature as the allegation suggested that he did. And so by the defense putting him up on the stand today, it's a risky move because defendants do not have to testify. But Terrence Shannon Jr., given his background, his behavior, his demeanor, he was the perfect defendant to testify on his own behalf and state his case.
That was the question I was going to ask you next, is we've seen some very highly politically charged court cases recently where the defendant didn't go on to the stand. Rightly or wrongly, that's not the point, but with what did you think of the decision to do this? And would you have done that if you were litigating this case? Because as you said, there is some inherent risk in that.
Yeah, it's a game time decision or a trial decision. You know, a lot of things in my life revolve around sports. So game time decision. But in this case, going into today, I think it was still up in the air if they were going to call him. And his own attorneys, both Mark Sutter and Trisha Bath, were absolutely phenomenal in their approach, in their strategy, in their professionalism, with how they handled this. Certain attorneys know you don't put certain clients on the stand. It's just a reality of the world that we live in. You have to be able to judge character, judge credibility, and judge how a potential witness would testify. You know, what would their presentation be like? And in this case, everybody knew in his camp, Terrence Shannon Jr.'s background. They knew how he was as a person. They knew how he was as a respectful student. They knew what his coaches thought of him. You know, Tim Johnson came in today and testified on his behalf and gave incredibly heartfelt, you know, pouring out his true emotions of how he has felt about Terrence Shannon since he's been in eighth grade. And I thought his testimony, along with Reba Daniels yesterday and his teammates, all backed him up that one, this is something that Terrence Shannon Jr. would never have done, but also who he is as a person, that this does not fit his narrative. This does not fit his nature. And by putting him on the stand, I think Terrence Shannon was able to tell the jury today in their own eyes what they needed to hear.
Yeah, let's be real honest. Tim Anderson has an incredible reputation of building relationships with players. And this is nothing more but a reinforcement of the fact that college basketball is a game, but those relationships that coaches and players make, those things last a lifetime. It's not just about winning and losing over a short period of time.
Yeah, and I think you find that most when things get tough. And if coaches really mean what they say, and, you know, I don't know Tim Anderson, but after evaluating how he testified today, that man is a winner. That man is a player's coach. That man is a mentor. You could just tell in his testimony how much he cares. And he actually says, you know, he said today, I love him. You know, I love him. I'm broken that we're, this is where we're at. This is not the person that he is. This is not the person that would commit the type of allegations that are alleged against him. And he's known him for so long, and he's kept that relationship to him. And when you recruit as a college basketball coach, you talk about family, you talk about culture, you talk about those things are really, really important. And sometimes coaches use that as lip service. But in a case like this, you can tell that these Illinois coaches, Tim Anderson specifically, they meant it.
Yeah, that is great to hear. When you look at this case, what did you think about the presiding judge, Honorable Amy Hanley? My understanding is that she's very smart, a no-nonsense job, and she's active in teaching trial advocacy skills at the National Institute of Trial Advocacy. What were your impressions of her?
Yes, Judge Amy Hanley was terrific. As you said, she's a no-nonsense judge. She's very much about procedure and formality of court. She keeps very well control of her courtroom. At no time did I ever feel that she was unsure of any decision. In fact, I felt the opposite, that no, whatever she says, it's gospel. Yep. And you should feel that way about the judge and about the system, and about the court. But like all humans, judges are different. And so you don't know what judge you're going to get or how they're going to react to certain things. But to your point, I thought Judge Amy Hanley did a terrific job overseeing this case. And again, she has no interest, no care at all in the outcome. She just wants to make sure that the process is played out fair, transparent, and really objective to both sides so they can present their best case.
Yeah, that's excellent to hear, because we hear so many people trying to chip away at the American justice system, the American election system, things like that. So it's awesome to hear that you walk away with a sense of confidence that people are getting their fair hearing. We've had a lot of people ask us, what was the jury's reaction to things that were heard? So when the victim had their testimony, what did you think the jury's reaction was to that?
Yeah, I mean, you're interested. You want to hear from the alleged victim. You want to hear the story. You want to, you know, size her up and to see if she's credible, if she's telling a story that could be believed. And here's the thing, and Mark Setter did a good job of this. No part of this case was intended to minimize or be insensitive to victims of sexual assault. Absolutely not. And in fact, those voices should be heard and they should be amplified. However, when somebody's accused of doing something, they have a right to defend themselves. And when you defend themselves and it's put before a jury, then you toss it out of the alleged victim's hands. It's no longer her voice. It's going to be the jury's voice that makes the decision. Throughout the alleged victim's testimony, I thought she was obviously testifying with confidence, but I was not sure today, as I was May 10th, that her emotions were as real or as believable as I think she wanted to make them seem. This was a traumatic event is how she alleged it. However, in the police report, she never used the word scared. She never used the word terrified. She never used the word traumatic as it is. But then she got to court, 9-10 months later, in front of everyone, and then said those words. She was terrified and other adjectives, et cetera. So again, minute by minute, the jury can scrutinize each and every statement made by any party. And in this case, not that she was unbelievable or incredible by any means, but the evidence just did not match up finding Taryn Shannon guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. No way.
How did, conversely, how did the jury react to the email with the dollar emojis, which really, as I was reading your tweet, I was like, holy cow, what was that? Could you detect a emotional response out of the jury when that happened?
Yeah. In a lot of trials, there can be aha moments or moments where it truly, you feel like game changing, the tide has turned. And I did feel when that got put up there on the big screen, I saw two female jurors sitting in the front row who truly, as I put out there, opened their eyes almost like, oh boy. Because here's the thing about that. It's important to differentiate that the alleged victim did not make that statement with the emojis, right, with the money right signs. However, it was a very good friend in a group chat she was a part of, and she did not refute it. She did not come back and say, that's not funny to joke about. This is serious. This is my life. I hope justice is served. Or please don't talk about money like that. It's not about that. There are so many different things that she could have said, but she didn't. And the jury is allowed to take reasonable inferences when evaluating somebody's testimony or evidence that's presented. And when you take a reasonable inference on a case like this, that obviously, I think, weighed heavily on the defense side.
Could you tell any difference between the dueling DNA experts in the mind of the jury?
A lot of it was over people's head, mine too. And I don't mean to undermine anybody's intelligence, my own included.
Right, right.
This is very, very technical, very, very scientific oriented, information. And unless you're an expert in the field, when you start using some of these terms that were used and thrown out in court, I felt one guy in the back row wasn't even paying attention because it was so, so in depth as to what these, measurements were with swabs and details. The big picture, though, they took out of it is that at no point was Terrence Shannon Jr.'s DNA evidence found in or around her body. And that to me was a major, major, point for the defense.
How did they react to Terrence Shannon Jr. when he made his testimony? I've got to think, based on just being around the program, that his style, it's very gentle. And it's kind of a opposite when you see this powerful guy and then his demeanor and his way of communicating, it's more soft. How did they react to that?
Yeah, his academic advisor actually described him as a gentle giant. And so when you hear Terrence Shannon Jr. speak, I think you actually take a step back a little bit and you're a little bit surprised because he is soft spoken. He does not have a commanding or demanding presence by any nature. And so when you hear him speak, immediately you drop your own guard down and say, okay, this is not a big powerful man trying to overtake me with dominance or overtake me in a commanding way. I think you feel the opposite. You actually level up to his size and say, okay, I could probably relate to this person. Yep. And so I think the jury certainly liked hearing from him. And like I said, he testified so calm, so cool, very collected in his nature that no part of him came across entitled, arrogant, mad, anything like that. And I think that played a major part in their quick decision.
Okay. No, that's good. Did the friend of the victim, the alleged victim, was she credible and likable up on the stand?
I think she was credible, except for the fact that part of her story did change. And I thought embellish a little bit, throughout the police officer's affidavit, it never mentioned that, the friend saw Terrence Shannon Jr. grab her wrist and pull her into him. And then she gets in trial. And 2 days ago, she testifies that she witnessed that 2 feet away. That was certainly an impeachable moment where you cross-examine her and say, you understand, when your mind was fresh about this incident, you never reported that to anybody. And those type of statements, those type of questions can really have a chilling effect on a jury wondering, well, why are you saying this now when back then it was fresh in your mind and you never reported it? So I don't think she was unbelievable. And I don't think any part of either of these females' testimony was trying to exaggerate or punish TJ for anything. I just think that they were telling their story and it was up to the jury to decide who to believe.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's totally understandable. Was there a most valuable witness on the stand that you saw over the course of this short trial?
In trials, everybody plays their part. All evidence, all testimony, all objections by the lawyers, everything is important because the jury is truly micromanaging under a microscope what you're doing. However, if there was two people that stood out to me the most, I'd have to say it was Reba Daniels, the academic advisor, who came in and just with the most heartfelt, testimony. I could get, teary-eyed talking about it. Basically told the jury, it's still shocking to me that we're even sitting here today talking about this. Statements like that, I certainly think rang loud in a juror's ear that how could this, man sitting right here possibly do something? And then the second person was obviously Tim Anderson today coming in and testifying about him as an eighth grader, about how he treats people back on campus, about how hard he works, about how important his taking care of his family financially is for him, and that he would never screw this opportunity up. Those type of chilling moments that come from people that know him better than anybody in the courtroom certainly have a profound impact on what a jury can hear.
As a lawyer, you of course are very keen on watching the jury. Was there any tips to you about their demeanor as they returned to the courtroom that told you anything before they told you something?
Yeah. And, they say body language doesn't, whisper, it screams. And I think watching the jury, which is something that I really enjoy trial work, I'm a trial litigator, is watching a jury, watching how people react or respond to evidence or, you know, things that are up on the big board shown to everybody, is valuable. And you can kind of take that approach, and either you need to slow your questions down, you need to stop asking questions. There's a lot of different ways that you have to on the fly adjust to how a jury's body language is towards you. There were several times throughout this trial that I felt the district attorney took things too far, and the jury itself was turned off by it, thinking, okay, this is enough. We've heard this story before. And if you can't have the ability to truly read your room and understand how these people are feeling, that can be detrimental to your case. Self-awareness is so important for an attorney to have, and obviously for litigants to have. And if you don't have that, like I said, that can be fatal.
Yeah. Did you notice anything about the foreman of the jury when they read the thing? Was it who you thought it would be? Any comments on that?
Yeah, that's one of the most famous games for lawyers to do when they go to trial is while they're waiting for the jury to make their decision and render their verdict, is to choose who do you think is going to be the jury foreperson, either the man or woman, to make the decision. Throughout the trial, and especially during jury selection, you can get an idea of who could be the leader of this group. You start to understand personalities and jury selection. You see how people respond. You find out what their jobs are, their level of education. And I actually told Mark Sutter, TSJ's attorney, when they were deliberating, I said, you know, the jury foreman is sitting front right, the police officer, right? And we both laughed because he picked the same person. And so we were on the same page with that. But that just goes to show you a police officer was on the jury hearing all of this, you know, police detective work. And obviously that had a major impact because he was the foreperson that helped make the decision.
Wow. That's a great piece of knowledge that people may not really, really get without your assistance. So there's a lot of Illinois fans who are very outraged now because they believe that even prosecuting Terrence Shannon Jr., that decision made by the local DA was a bad one. And some folks are actually saying that TSJ should actually do a lawsuit against the accuser, the state, meaning the DA, or both. What is your opinion on how likely that is to file a lawsuit? And how would you counsel someone in his position if they were working with you?
Yeah, good question. You know, I've had quite a bit of feedback, to say it mildly, about some of the information that I put out there. I've had dozens and dozens of requests from both local and national media to discuss this case. And that's one of the first things they say is, what's the next step? And I think for anybody, that's for Terrence Shannon, his family, his attorneys, the legal folks that were involved in this case, the observers, the judge, everybody right now needs to take a step back and relax on what the next step's going to be. Everything just came down right now. That can be often the problem with our society, is people want to rush to judgment and take the next step to try to find somebody else guilty or try to accuse somebody else. And that's not the sign of a clear thinker, someone with true intelligence that can take a decision, digest it, and then figure out what's the next best reasonable approach going forward. I'm not in a position right now to say one way or the other what should happen. I do know, to prove a case of defamation, that there was some sort of, meritless, you know, case to try to get him. There's a lot of things you have to prove, that it's done with malice, that you knew it was false, that you, you know, there's so many things to prove in that. And you have to ask yourself, why, you know, do we want to even go down this road and litigate for another 6 to 9 to 12 months and relive all this drama? So to answer your question, I think we all need to take a step back, breathe in this verdict, let it sit, and then let the next steps play out naturally how they will.
Yeah, I think that's great advice, because there's a lot of anger out there. I'm not saying it's not justified. I'm not a lawyer and I'm not involved in this case, but certainly it seems like people need to take a step back. It's kind of like somebody wanted to declare the Boston Celtics the best team in the history of the NBA. And I'm like, well, could we wait till they win the title before we make them the best team of all time? The rush to judgment.
Yeah, and I would think the 90s Bulls would like the word, you know.
yeah, they like the word a lot. When you walk away from this, does this experience give you a lot more confidence in the criminal justice system after what we've seen and we've got to watch it play out? And for you, you had a front row seat.
Yeah, I've had a front row seat to this entire process. And I'm very appreciative of Terrence Shannon Jr. and his mom and family welcoming me in. I've been along for the ride behind the scenes, is probably the best way to put it. And I just left the entire group just a short while ago before I got on here. And so the emotional roller coaster right now is coming to a halt. And I think for all of us is taking a step back and just realizing what everybody went through can be somewhat exhausting. And for myself, I've been around law my entire life. I've been very lucky to be the son of a judge. And so I've seen how litigants, how attorneys, how judges can react to major verdicts or not react when things don't get done. And I think it's so important to never get too high, never get too low, and just see, you know, what's the best, you know, most reasonable, rational approach to the next thing in front of you. You know, you're only as good as your last game, as they say. Yep. And while, yes, this is a victory, you know, for Terrence Shannon Jr.'s team, you just don't know what tomorrow brings. And so you just got to keep it one, you know, one step at a time.
Now, you've had a unique spot as you're reporting on this. Of course, you're fielding probably thousands of questions that people are giving. Did you come away with anything thinking like we could do better in teaching civics to our young people? Was there any area of the law that you're thinking, boy, as a country, we should do a little bit better job teaching our citizens about how things work? Did you run into that at all?
Well, I think education is important for everybody. And that starts at a young age in grade school and stays with you through high school or any post-secondary education, you know, you go through. But you can never stop learning. And that includes me. That includes Judge Amy Hanley, who just presided over this case, is that the moment you stop learning, stop growing and trying to get better, sadly, it's almost as if you've stopped learning and are dying. And that's not an ominous way to look at it, but we're all ready to grow and to become more educated and learn. And so from this process, I think there are so many things to learn from this, both good, both bad, and, you know, adjustments that could be made. But the reality of this is no system, no court case is ever going to be perfect. There's always going to be somebody that feels that they didn't have their true day, or there's somebody that feels that they didn't get their fair shake. And sadly, without sounding heartless, part of that is life. And nothing's going to be perfect. It's how you react and how you respond to it will really show who your true character.
And one final legal question about this case, or at least spinning around it. Now that you've watched the whole thing, how do you feel Terrence Shannon Jr.'s family is doing after they've kind of went through this whole gauntlet? And obviously mom's been a huge support. Terrence has went through this. How are they doing after the case?
Emotional. That's probably the best way to describe it. And so kind of his team, that we were all just together a short while ago. There were a lot of hugs. There were a lot of tears. They were rejoicing. There was some celebration. There was some laughter. But at the end of the day, I think the biggest word is relief, relief that the process is over, relief that the case is behind him. And really that he can now, you know, move on and try to focus on the next step in his life. And, you know, not to look too far ahead, but it's pretty quickly coming up here. 13 days away is the NBA draft, which is what his lifelong dream is as a kid was to be a part of. And to think it could have gone a completely different direction and he could be heading to somewhere totally different is truly wild to think about. And so I think the biggest word right now is relief. But like I said, it's just going to be one day at a time taking this in stride.
Yep. So now that the trial's over, what's next for you? How do you go back to, you know, just a normal law practice after all of this?
Yeah, so I don't consider any part of my day normal.
Okay, good.
I've got a lot of cases, a lot of clients that I'm fortunate to work with. I'm very lucky to have a busy practice that has a lot going on. And so just like Terrence Shannon Jr.'s team is, I got to take the next day one day at a time. I've got calls to make. I've got clients to respond to. And you're only as good as your last case, but every, you know, next client you talk to is the most important. So it's important to be on and really give each client, you know, your professional attention to make sure that they understand their case is the most important to you, just like Terrence Shannon's was to him. And that's the reality of an attorney and how they should handle their cases.
Any final thoughts before we end this? And again, I want to reiterate, thank you so much for not only finding time to get on here, but even having to go through a town you might not be totally familiar with to make it happen.
No, thanks for having me. It's been 5 great days here in Lawrence, Kansas. Certainly looking forward to getting back to go to Peoria, my home, where my two girls are that are 8 and 10. And if I could say one thing about this case that I feel kind of sums everything up, it's justice. And justice was rendered today. A jury returned a verdict of not guilty on both counts and determined Terrence Shannon is innocent. And he gets to move on with his life. And to all the victims of sexual assault, this is obviously a very serious issue. And you want to wish them the best. They need to have a voice. They need to be heard. But it's got to play itself out. And it certainly did in this case.
Thank you so much, Mitch Gilfillan. It is fantastic to have you on. And we really appreciate you taking time to appear on Eye on the Illini.
Thanks, Mike. Best of luck to you guys.
Thank you.
Whether you live in Champaign or Chicago, halfway across the country, or on the other side of the world, IlliniGuys.com keeps you in the know, be it in-game results, top-level stories, or the latest behind-the-scenes info and recruiting. IlliniGuys.com has you covered. For about 25 cents a day, you can have an inside path to your favorite Illini teams, and we'll even throw in a free 7-day trial to kick the tires. Go to IlliniGuys.com, click the register button, and get immediate access to dozens of stories each month, message forums, free giveaways, and more. IlliniGuys.com.
Hi, I'm Ronnie Deutsch, and if you or your business owe money to the IRS, I've got great news for you. Tax laws have changed. Billions of dollars are earmarked for IRS Fresh Start programs, and if you qualify, you can literally save tens of thousands of dollars. Listen, I know what you're going through. Call me if you want to speak with a tax attorney or tax professional for free.
800-523-6376. That's 800-523-6376.
Thank you so much to Mitch Gilfillan for coming on today. It was fantastic to get his input and some of what was going on. We're going to have more coverage here at Illini Guys, but we really wanted to get him on because he has done such a fantastic job of keeping people up to date on what's going on. 6 months ago, he was doing this, and he's gotten quite a following. You can get him. You can see down below, or if you are listening to the podcast, at Mitch Gilfillan is how you follow him on Twitter. Of course, you can get our podcast, Eye on the Illini. You can subscribe to that. You can also get it on YouTube. Go to the IlliniGuys.com channel and subscribe there. This is a great time to subscribe. If you want to get information on the University of Illinois athletics, come to IlliniGuys.com. That's all I can say. And of course, you can go to our website, www.IlliniGuys.com. You can subscribe for $99 for a year. You get all the articles, you get the podcasts, you get the YouTubes, all that stuff. But you also get the message boards. That's where you can read the latest information, some of the stuff that's hard to basically corroborate and get multiple sources. We can put the rumors on there. Very rarely are Illini Guys fans surprised about things that go on. It's a great place. If you're an Illini fan, whether you live in Champaign or Chicago, halfway across the country or halfway across the world, IlliniGuys.com keeps you in the know. With that, we will be back later. Go Illini!